that whole discussion around is AI replacing human creativity, it's just not. It's forcing us or encouraging us to learn a new skill, which in turn like elevates us as creatives, full stop. And that is really important.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. My name is Jonathan Gandolf, founder and CEO of The Juice. I'm thrilled to be joined today by Jen Rapp, CMO of Superside. I'm a big fan of Superside. They've got an awesome brand. They provide a really great product and services to the entire space. So it's going to be interesting to kind of get their overview of what they're seeing in market, what they're doing for their customers, and how they think about content and how all of this can play a role in content. So before I ramble too much, Jen, in your own words, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background and a little bit about Superside.
So I like to joke that I'm not your traditional CMO. I come from not a tech background, not a B2B background. I am a rock climber and spent a majority of my younger years and early 20s rock climbing a ton. It's been an integral part of my life for the last 20 years. And I started my career at Patagonia, the outdoor apparel company. And I ran communications at Patagonia. But it was really unique, like running comms at Patagonia and working hand in hand with Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia, was a really cool lesson in a lot of different things about marketing, about no budgets, about self-imposed slow growth, which is just so different from tech. But I spent 10 years at Patagonia and then eventually found my way into tech and ran marketing for DoorDash pre-IPO, and sort of have found my sweet spot in my career is joining a company pre-IPO, helping get them on that road to IPO in terms of a rebrand, clarifying their value propositions, clarifying who we are in market and what matters most to the founders and the company and the customers. And that's a little bit about my career. Today, I'm CMO at Superside. Superside is amazing. We are a creative service that basically is built to be an extension of your in-house creative team. We're actually pretty dang purpose-built for enterprise companies. And a lot of our biggest customers are the big dogs you've heard about. So Amazon, Google, Reddit, Intuit, you know, all the big companies, all the big tech companies are Superside customers. And we exist to augment their creative teams to help them get stuff done. The way I found Superside and ended up taking this job is unique. Well, I guess maybe it's not that unique. I was a customer. And when I was running marketing and specifically brand marketing and creative at Klaviyo, might have heard of Klaviyo. We IPO'd last year. We're an email, SMS, and CDP company. But our creative team was always at max. We were always underwater. We were the blocker. We were the bottleneck. And we hired Superside to come in and augment our creative team and really act as an extension of our team to get stuff done fast, effectively, inexpensively. So when this opportunity came up, I was like, hey, I know Superside because I've used us before and I've lived this pain point. And I feel like marketers do best when they're marketing to themselves. As a marketer, I can be the best marketer when like I really understand the pain points. I've lived it, whether that's as a rock climber or that's as a marketing executive. Like you can best market to yourself. And so I'm really loving being here and having a blast.
This is fascinating. I've got like 100 follow-up questions that I'll try to get to and try to condense here, but totally agree on marketing to marketers. And prior to The Juice, I was leading marketing and sales dev at a healthcare analytics platform, and our buyer was a benefits consultant. And it was just like, I always struggled to like get in their shoes a little bit. You know, that was the job and we did our best to do that, but it's marketing to marketers. There's a special energy that comes with that, I think.
Agreed.
And I have to say, huge fan of the Patagonia background. I've got, it's at home. I'm in the office today, but the I think it's Let My People Go Surfing. The book kind of about the Patagonia culture and some of the leadership in the business. It's one of my favorites. And I always found it interesting. Like, it's kind of, at least the version I have, it's almost laid out like a textbook. And I think that's pretty telling that it's so tactical and actionable in that way. I always thought that was kind of interesting. So,
and I was at the company when Yvonne wrote that book and actually did all the PR around that book. It was written like a textbook.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool that you noticed that. Not a lot of people did, but literally it was written to be like, this was an experiment. Patagonia has been an experiment. Like, could we do good for the planet and run a successful business? And Yvonne's answer was, yes, you can and should. And here's how you go do it. There was a follow-on book called The Responsible Company that like went a step further and felt even more textbook.
I'll have to add that to the list for sure, because I reference that Let My People Go Surfing somewhat regularly. Well, cool. You mentioned your non-traditional CMO. This is a non-traditional B2B podcast. It is the Content Cocktail Hour. So he's always like asking our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
God, I have five children. Five. That wasn't like a typo or you didn't hear that wrong. So I drink a lot.
I'm kidding.
But I've really actually been enjoying Negronis lately. Like, when I go out, it's like really strong, kind of hits you hard. And it's a really nice way to start off your evening.
Love that. I just had Adam Sokol on the podcast from Warham. The episode actually went live this morning. And he enjoys alcohol as well. But he said what he's enjoying lately is what's called a phony Negroni. It's a non-alcoholic version. It's really good. Like, I like it as a regular drink. So Negroni has been a popular theme on that question with a lot of our guests.
The other thing that I drank a lot this summer, and I've been in Europe quite a bit. Superside is our founders are based in Oslo, Norway. And so I take every opportunity when I go over there to do a little bit of traveling. And what is the red? It's a Campari spritz. It's not what does everyone love these days? The Aperol spritz. It's Campari. It's a little more bitter.
Hey, I'm thirsty now. This is not good on a Thursday. Yeah. More cool. Let's dig in. I'm so intrigued by your CMO perspective, your marketing to marketer perspective. As we are recording this, it's late September. This is going to go live here in October. Businesses are thinking about 2025, specifically design. There are so many new technologies, services out there that are all changing so fast. And it's this calendar, this time on the calendar kind of represents an opportunity to stop, pause, think deeply about what the next year should look like. What advice do you have for teams and marketers as they're thinking about a design partner for 2025? How do you start this process, and then what would you guide them through from your perspective?
Yeah. I think having selected design partners over the last 15 years, what I have found is make sure your design partner, creative partner, however you want to frame it up, really understands the value and difference between performance versus beautiful design. And I think that's really key right now. You hear people talking a lot about like creative is the new targeting. Creative is becoming more important than ever before. Like, in a world where there's, you know, it's kind of equal playing ground where we can all target, we all have access to these incredible tools. We all have, you know, access to Facebook and incredible ABM platforms. Like, you need a partner that can say to you, look, this is what performs really well, and we can help you get there. We can take your brief, we can take your ask, and we can help you make it better. And then really like find a partner that you can hold their feet to the fire on that. Follow up. It's not like a one and done. It's like, hey, my creative partner needs to be able to say, that didn't perform very well. Like, we've been watching, you know, like, or be able to take data back from you and adapt and shift and get you where you need to go. For example, like, Superside has a product that's in beta right now. It's called Super Ads, and it's going to be launching pretty soon, more formally. But it's a product where you can look at all of your performance marketing ads and find out which are performing best and why. And that is really important, like for your creative partner, whether it's through a platform like Super Ads or through a different kind of service, like they need to be able to tell you, like, this is what we believe is going to perform best. That's important. I also think, like, we can, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it today, but AI and how your creative partner is bringing AI to the table. I guarantee every B2B marketer that's listening to this podcast has a boss that's asking them, how are you incorporating AI into right. your workflows? Yep. How is it going to make your team more efficient? How is it going to make your work better? How are you going to A/B test more? And so I think really looking for a partner that has real life, tangible ways they're using AI, and we'll talk about that probably in a little while, but that's really important. I think those two things are key for 2025 specifically.
I think when generative AI first kind of became widely available, there was a lot of fear, maybe rightfully so, that it was going to replace a lot of creative work, content marketers, designers, whatever that may be. And I think pretty quickly, at least what I am feeling, what I've seen and heard is that we are far better collectively at discerning what is written or created by AI versus human created. I don't know how exactly to explain that, but I think what's happened is there's less fear about now AI being used to replace creative work, but it's become an operational efficiency. So I think what you were just saying around, like, everyone in B2B is being asked, how can we use AI to work more efficiently, faster, better results, whatever that may be, is very true. But what about the creative space? Like, has Supersign had to evolve kind of how it delivers creative work to your clients? Or is it actually an advantage because now you can do it more? Like, creativity in that creative space is just so, like, it feels like the gulf is almost getting wider between really creative, like, human-centered work and AI-generated kind of burn and churn work. Just what has the evolution been with AI at Supersign? Is, I guess maybe I'll ask the high-level question.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the, like, how we've actually upskilled ourselves to be able to do AI work. And then your other question, I think, is separate. I think they're two different questions. I think the first one is we actually invested in upskilling 400 of our creatives to be fully trained on AI.
Wow.
So that they are great at Midjourney. They're great at Leonardo. They're great at Runway. They know how to use the tools and are fully trained up. Whereas your in-house staff, your in-house team might not be yet. They are probably so underwater and just trying to, like, get everything done. We almost wanted to say, look, we should and can become your shortcut to an in-house AI-powered in-house team. And that was a big commitment that Supersign made and continues to make around just upskilling. The other thing that we're really able to do is, like, take that efficiency spin, and we're able to get work done faster. We're able to get work done that is better. And that's that key part, is, like, it's better work. It is more beautiful. It is more eye-catching. It is taking human talent and creativity and elevating it. It's not replacing it. And we're able to take all those efficiencies, whether it's less time, higher performing work, but specifically we're able to pass on, like, cost savings and time savings directly to our customers. And suddenly that becomes a really compelling prospect for people who are like, gosh, I'm kind of dragging my feet on AI. And you're suddenly like, oh, wait, I'm going to save a bunch of money and, like, the work's going to perform better. It's suddenly like, all right, cool, I'm interested. The other element is, like, that whole discussion around, is AI replacing human creativity? It's just not. It's forcing us or encouraging us to learn a new skill, which in turn, like, elevates us as creatives, full stop. And that is really important. Like, we did a big virtual summit yesterday at Supersign, And we had this incredible woman named Jessie Hughes. Go look her up. Have her on your podcast. She's from Leonardo AI. And she basically did a presentation to our 6,000 registrants, basically saying, like, look, if AI is making your work more creative and more beautiful, get on board. And showed these insane videos from like Nike that were so much better. Like, you wouldn't know they were AI designed. And her point was, look, if it is elevating marketing and creativity and your customer experience, go there. Don't stress. Take a beautiful photo. And let's say you do a photo shoot and you've got 10 killer photos. Well, AI can turn that into 150 killer photos based on like that one photo shoot. Or work from Mercedes, she showed, where it was like they didn't have to go to Iceland and shoot their new car. AI did it for them. And they can take the human energy and spend it elsewhere. So there's all of these different exciting things happening. And it feels very much like Patagonia days. I was doing photo editing at one point. No. Pre-Patagonia, I was at Black Diamond Equipment or Rock Climbing Equipment. I was their photo editor, which like says nothing about my talent and everything about the fact they were desperate. And I remember the change between slides, digital slides, or like slides that photographers would send us slides to digital. And everyone was like, holy shit, I'm going to be out of a job. Like, I'm a photographer and now I don't know what to do. And we're seeing that right now with like designers and people that are a little nervous about it. Give it a couple years and it is going to be something that elevates and brings efficiency rather than scares us in creativity terms.
Instead of being afraid of it, you know, embrace it and use it to your advantage. I think that's really smart. And from a business perspective, yeah, like there's, I love that idea of like, it's actually kind of increasing your ability to better serve and price for your customers. Like that's so smart. 100%. That's a win for everybody. So that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've talked about design a little bit and I'm curious from your CMO seat, this is a little bit of a self-serving question, but a big part of design is the role that it plays in content for businesses, whether that's ads or traditional like content marketing. If you don't mind me asking, I'd love to kind of hear how you as CMO of Superside think about content kind of in your day-to-day and where it fits in the overall like marketing org and initiatives that you're working on.
For sure. So coming from a non-B2B background and, you know, my first foray into B2B was going to Klaviyo. And I learned very quickly about this magnificent world of B2B content.
I learned a lot of acronyms as well, because we love those in the B2B space.
Yeah. But really, like, B2B marketing is more content-based than almost any other marketing out there today. And so from a CMO perspective, I find that content is one of our most cost-efficient and effective lead gen tools ever. Like yesterday, we did we did a virtual summit, which by all intents and purposes is content. We drove over 6,000 registrants, 1,000 of which were our enterprise ICP. And that's a win. That is amazing. And so for me as a CMO, I'm like, how do I double down on that? How do I bring more creativity into our content, more incredible people? And then also from something like a webinar or a virtual summit, how do I take all this incredible content we got during these 6 hours and make it more appetizing to someone that might want to read, that might want to just take a look at it on social, might want to watch a video snippet rather than a full hour? And so we're getting really creative in how we are repurposing our content. AI is a great tool with that. And also from my specific case here at Superside, y'all have probably seen our ads, right? Like, you've seen our funny ads. They're incredible. Our team turns them around in like split seconds. They're so talented. They're so creative. But I'm always thinking about ad content. And I'm thinking about how our team can create content that is specific for our ICP. So right now, we are really trying to think about what kind of content appeals to the enterprise creative business leader. And I bet a lot of B2B companies are also wanting to target the same individual, like CMOs, creative directors. Like, what are they reading? What are they interested in? What captures their attention? And so today, like, content for me, it's an area where we couldn't, I mean, we were so committed. We couldn't be more committed and are just trying to make it better and better every quarter.
That's awesome. That's fantastic to hear that it's so core to everything you do. I always say content's kind of the oxygen for the rest of the marketing kind of initiatives and everything that's going on in the department. So I love that perspective, and it's refreshing to hear.
There's also so many different kinds of content these days. And it's like, it's not one size fits all. It's like, you need listicles for people that don't have a lot of time. You need long form content for those that really want to learn. You need video content for people that are visual and learn visually. And so I think in B2B marketing and in B2B content, you're really being forced to get more creative, especially as every single B2B company is on this content bandwagon.
It's very subtle, and it's going to sound obvious as I say it out loud, but I love in both of your responses, you're like, we're thinking about our ICP, like that individual and what they want and what they need. I think a lot of times we as marketers are guilty of thinking of like what we're good at or what we want to do. And I love that the first thing that you do is understanding the different ICPs and the different ways they consume content before you even think about what Superside does or is going to do or how you deliver that content. Just, again, it sounds obvious to say out loud, but I think that's probably what makes you all successful is understanding the ICP so intimately.
Yeah, and it evolves over time too for businesses. Like at Klaviyo, during my 3+ year tenure at Klaviyo, and this is very common for a lot of B2B companies, we wanted to go up market.
Don't we all?
Right. And like a bulk of our customers were SMBs, they were entrepreneurs. And our goal was to like move up market to the mid market customer. And we had to shift our content strategy totally from like, our founder, Andrew Bialecki, was always like, Jen, stop creating 101 level content. I want like 201 level content, 301 level content that like mid-market people actually, they're ready to learn. They're smart. They're deep into the business. They're 20 years into their career. Like, go make better content. And we did. We had to like shift our strategy full stop to meet the needs of the business and that desire to move up market.
So cool. Love that. Is your background being rock climber and then B2C, is that an advantage in the B2B space?
I always joke that my history as a rock climber was really relevant in the tech space. And by tech, I mean like VC-backed companies that are like in high growth mode. And I used to joke with the founder of DoorDash that him and I were not that different. We were both really good at accepting and managing high-risk situations and understanding how to not die in them, literally. Whereas I'm in, you know, I might be on the side of a wall and like night is coming and I'm like, okay, cool, I gotta move fast or I'm gonna be stranded out here. Tony would be like, okay, I need to get another round of funding and 400 people's lives depend on my ability to do this. And so there's this like risk management, there's the ability to move fast to save yourself and others. And that risk tolerance really helps you make decisions better. And I find a lot of similarities between like rock climbers and tech founders.
It reminds me of the Stockdale paradox, which is like the ability to confront the brutal facts of reality, but have like unwavering optimism that you'll find a way to succeed or something like that. But I think you're right. Like that.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, I may have butchered that just a little bit, but it's balancing the brutal facts of reality, and I think unwavering faith that you'll succeed or something like that. But that's sounds very similar. Like, yeah, I need to get to the top of this mountain or I'm going to sleep on the side of it, right?
Or in freeze to death. Like, totally. You asked a really good question though about B2C and the impact that has on B2B. And I remember going to Klaviyo and talking in my interview process, talking to them, being like, you guys, I'm not B2B. Why are you even considering me for this role? Like, this isn't my expertise.
Bold strategy, trying to disqualify yourself. Yes.
Yeah. But I was genuinely perplexed. I was like, you know, I'm really great at consumer brands. What the heck are, why are we talking? And their response was, we believe that like B2B can learn from B2C. And there is nothing redeeming about being a cold, unemotional B2B brand anymore. And I think we are borrowing more and more B2C tactics in B2B. And you have to, like, at the end of the day, it's still a human making the decision. You still need to connect with them emotionally. You still need to make them see the value in what you do. And ideally, you do that through emotion. And so I think, like, across the board, B2B brands are starting to become more human, become more like a B2C brand. And I think it was really, really helpful for us in the rebranding of Klaviyo and might be helpful for us in the rebranding of Superfluent.
Oh, sneak peek. Well, listen to that. It's fascinating. The best content marketers we work with oftentimes aren't like traditionally trained marketers or from the B2B space. They are former journalists, former teachers, backgrounds in theater. Almost 100% of the best content marketers we work with aren't, you know, they didn't start in this space. And I think they're better storytellers. They're better question askers. They don't have some of the scar tissue and bad habits that maybe we form over time if we are boring in B2B.
No, and think about the best content out there. It feels very editorial. It feels like you're opening up the New York Times and you're getting news, you're getting information. Like, oftentimes that doesn't come from a marketer's voice. That comes from like a journalist's voice, right? Or someone that's like really good writer and can like connect with you in their writing.
So good. We're unfortunately winding down on the time here, which is, like I said, unfortunate. Maybe we'll have to do a follow-up episode because I have so many more rock climbing questions, Patagonia questions. But we always wrap the podcast, Jen, by asking, what's one unpopular opinion you have in the marketing space?
I knew you were going to ask this question. And I was going to talk about B2B versus B2C. And I was going to say, I think B2B marketers can learn a ton from the D2C space. Go out there, look at what beauty companies are doing. Beauty companies are at the forefront of content, of customer engagement, of marketing in general. We as B2B marketers can learn a lot from like the Glossiers of the world and all of these incredible beauty companies. They are at the forefront. And I think pay attention to what's happening in the D2C world, because it's going to come downstream to B2B in a year. So really, like, I know most people that listen to your podcast might not be studying the ad weeks of the world and all over TikTok, watching what the beauty companies are doing on TikTok. But do. It'll make you a better marketer.
That's so good. And two things there. Inherently, you have to know the consumer much better because it is D2C. I think, like you mentioned earlier, like when we're creating content, we need to know who the consumer of our content is much better than maybe we often do. And two, a lot of those D2C businesses are built literally off the backs of creators, influencers, personal brands. And you're already seeing that infiltrate the B2B space a lot. So yeah, I think you're spot on. That's there with that perspective, because there's certainly a lot we could learn. So appreciate that insight. Well, Jen, if people want to continue to learn from you or learn more about Superside, what's the best way to do that?
Superside.com. Go book a call, learn about us, learn about what we do. Also, dig around in our content. We have a lot of really good content, especially around AI these days, especially around creative performance. Go learn. Like, we want to be a learning asset for you. So go check that out. Follow us. You've probably seen us on Instagram or on Facebook. So comment on our ads, engage with us there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, Jin, thank you. This has been fascinating. I've learned a lot. I know our audience has as well. Until next time on the Content Cocktail Hour, cheers.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.